Welcome to this deep dive. Today, our mission is to unpack a really deeply personal, just streaking piece of writing. It's called The Story of My Backyard by a creator named Russ.
Yeah, and it's such a fascinating read, honestly.
It really is. We're going to explore this whole intersection of, you know, human creativity, the intoxicating trap of modern technology, and just the search for profound personal purpose.
Right, because it really forces you to kind of examine your own creative impulses, you know, and the tools you use to actually realize them.
Exactly. And the arc of this journey is just, well, it's remarkable. We're talking about a timeline that spans 1.7 million miles on the highway as a truck driver.
Which is just a staggering number to even think about.
Right. 1.7 million miles. And then it goes into this lost notebook of dreams, a sudden pivot into coding and artificial intelligence, and finally, this really poignant realization that generating like 3,500 digital files might actually cause you to lose your own soul.
Yeah, it's very much a modern parable in that way. It's a story about a man who built this massive digital empire, only to realize the sheer scale of it was fundamentally at odds with, well, why he started building it in the first place.
So think about it like this for a second. Imagine you're building this quiet, simple garden in your backyard.
Okay, I like this analogy.
Yeah, so you plant a few seeds, you water them carefully, and it's this deeply personal, peaceful space for you. But then suddenly, someone just hands you the keys to industrial construction equipment.
Oh, boy.
Right. And because you have all this power and speed, suddenly, before you know it, you've accidentally built a sprawling steel skyscraper right over your garden.
And completely paved over the thing you love.
Exactly. And you're standing on the top floor looking down and you realize you don't even like heights. You just want your garden back.
That tension right there between the garden and the skyscraper is really the defining conflict of Russ's whole story.
But to figure out how he ended up lost in that digital skyscraper, we kind of have to look at the environment where his creative process was forged in the first place.
Right, because these stories weren't born in, like, a tech incubator or some fancy writer's retreat.
No, not at all. They were born in the cab of a semi-truck.
Which is such a specific, intense environment.
It really is. For years, Russ was a long-haul truck driver. He's traveling across the U.S., Canada, parts of Mexico. And like I said, he accumulated 1.7 million miles on the road. The source text makes a huge point of highlighting this specific era of his life.
And we really need to look at the psychology of that environment, because driving a long-haul truck is, in a lot of ways, an exercise in sensory deprivation that's just kind of disguised as constant movement.
Wait, sensory deprivation? How so? You're moving at 70 miles an hour?
Well, yeah, the scenery outside the windshield changes constantly, right? But the interior of the cab, the hum of the engine, the vibration of the seat, that all remains entirely static for hours and hours.
Oh, I see what you mean. The inside is just a constant hum.
Exactly. And neurologically, this induces a state that's really similar to highway hypnosis. The conscious brain is totally occupied with the mechanics of driving, but that leaves the subconscious mind as this massive empty canvas.
Wow, so his brain is just looking for something to fill the void.
Precisely. For Russ, that isolation became the crucible for his imagination. He filled all that silence by making up stories in his head while he drove.
And then when he finally parked the truck for the night, he would pull out this physical notebook and just write down the stories he'd been developing all day.
That notebook essentially became the tangible anchor for thousands of hours of thought.
But then, you know, life intervened in a pretty brutal way. In 2022, a severe heart attack took him off the road.
Just a sudden, terrifying shift.
Right, and he tried to pivot. He took a job teaching truck driving at a career school just to keep his connection to the industry. But then, in 2024, a second heart attack struck.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and this one forced a permanent, completely involuntary retirement from literally the only life he knew.
It is a profound loss of identity when something like that happens. I mean, he lost his livelihood, his physical health, and most importantly, his agency.
Because he didn't choose to step away.
Right. His body made the decision for him.
And during this chaotic period of illness and transition, the worst possible secondary blow happened.
Notebook.
The notebook. That precious physical notebook, the vessel containing all the stories he dreamt up across 1.7 million miles, it was misplaced. It was just gone.
Which is just heartbreaking. The physical manifestation of his entire internal life was wiped out right at the exact moment his external life collapsed.
It really is. And this is where I actually want to play devil's advocate for a second regarding his reaction.
Okay, go for it.
When someone suffers that kind of compounding loss, you know, your health fails, your career ends abruptly, and then the physical archive of your life's work vanishes, I feel like the most natural human response would be to just surrender.
To just give up.
Yeah, to grieve, maybe sink into a depression, and just accept that that chapter is officially over. But Russ didn't do that.
No, he didn't.
He sat down at a computer and started meticulously trying to reconstruct those lost stories from memory. And my question to you is, why? Why put yourself through the frustration of trying to remember something that's gone instead of just, you know, moving on?
Well, it comes right back to that concept of agency we were just talking about.
Yeah.
When you look at the mechanics of trauma and recovery, the body and the environment have entirely betrayed him.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely out of his control.
He has no control over his heart condition or his forced retirement, but the mind is still his territory. And he actually notes in his writing that he enjoyed the process of putting the fragments back together.
Wait, he enjoyed it, even though it was lost?
Yeah, because some stories came back entirely, others only in pieces, sure. But the act of mental reconstruction wasn't a chore for him. It was a survival mechanism.
Oh, that makes sense. It's like doing a jigsaw puzzle where the image is your own memory. Exactly. The process of searching for the missing pieces is the point, not just having the finished picture at the end. Rebuilding the stories piece by piece was a way of proving to himself that his core identity hadn't been erased.
So the cognitive effort required to reconstruct those narratives gave him a daily purpose, exactly when his traditional routine was just shattered.
Yes. But that concept of purpose brings us to the actual content of the stories, which I think is where things get really profound.
Right, because this shifts from a story of personal coping to a story of, like, deep outward devotion.
Mm-hmm.
The true catalyst for what would eventually become his website, My Backyard, wasn't just his time on the highway. It actually stemmed from this terrifying family crisis involving his niece, Dakota.
The narrative completely shifts here from the vast, open isolation of the road to this intense, claustrophobic environment of a medical emergency.
Yeah, it's a huge contrast. When Dakota was an infant, she contracted severe RSV from another child at daycare. And RSV, you know, respiratory syncytial virus, while it might just cause mild, cold-like symptoms in adults, it can be incredibly dangerous for babies.
It's terrifying. It inflames the small airways in the lungs.
And the imagery Russ shares from that time in the source material is just stark. He describes her being so small, fighting so hard just to pull in a breath, that her little ribs were visibly sucked in with every single inhale.
The psychological toll on a family watching an infant struggle to breathe like that is immense.
I can't even imagine.
The adults are desperate to fix a problem that is entirely internal and microscopic. They are essentially helpless observers to the physical struggle.
But Russ found a way to help. During her recovery, Dakota required these frequent nebulizer treatments. She would sit on Russ's lap while this loud machine pumped medication into a mask over her face.
Which is scary for a baby.
Super scary. And during those agonizing, chaotic minutes, Russ would read her story after story. He described the stories as a lifeline of comfort and calm.
And, you know, storytelling in that context serves a very specific physiological function.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, the stories weren't just entertainment. They provided a predictable rhythm. When a child's body is in a state of chaos and the machinery around them is loud and frightening, the steady rhythmic cadence of a familiar voice reading a narrative provides an external focal point.
It grounds them.
Exactly, it grounds them. And it also gives the adult a tangible role. Reading aloud allowed Russ to project calm and stability into the room, even if he was internally just terrified.
A predictable rhythm during chaos. That's a powerful way to look at it. It's like a digital nebulizer. Well, an emotional nebulizer at that point. Not just words on a page, but an actual delivery system for comfort and air when a kid is struggling to breathe.
That's a beautiful analogy, yeah.
And Dakota is grown and healthy now, thankfully. But that experience fundamentally changed how Russ viewed his creative work. He realized that the stories had the capacity to offer peace in the darkest moments.
And this is where it evolves into a much larger mission.
Right. His project, MyBackyard.org, became a tribute to Dakota and also to her father, Danny, who passed away way too soon. He aligned the entire project with his faith, specifically aiming to support children's charities like the Ronald McDonald House, Chicho P. Nemours, and the American Cancer Society.
He established a really specific operational philosophy for this work, rooted in his Christian faith. He drew on the parables of Christ and scriptures like Isaiah 25.4, which speaks of being a, quote, refuge for the needy in their distress, a shelter from the storm.
A shelter from the storm. That directly mirrors holding a child during a medical crisis.
It's a literal translation of that experience into a guiding ethos. He decided that every single thing he designed, whether it was a story, a coloring page, a tribute, was meant to be a seed of light.
A seed of light.
Right. The objective was simply to help love grow and faith take root, with the belief that if it gave even one child a moment of escape or comfort, the effort was entirely justified.
Yeah. I want you to keep that idea of a single seed of light in mind, because this is where the story takes a really fascinating turn into the mechanics of modern creation.
The tech phase.
The tech phase, yeah. Russ has this deeply grounded, highly personal mission. He wants to plant these seeds of light on the internet, but he's a retired truck driver recovering from multiple heart attacks. He doesn't know how to build a website.
But he doesn't let that stop him, does he?
Not at all. He dives in and teaches himself HTML and CSS to build the structure and style of the pages. He learns JavaScript to make it interactive. He even learns JSON, which, you know, is essentially a way to structure and transport data so different systems can talk to each other.
He is hand-coding the architecture of his vision from scratch.
Exactly.
And we have to acknowledge the cognitive load of learning those languages, especially at that stage in his life and under those physical circumstances. It's staggering.
Oh, for sure.
We were talking about learning complex syntax.
Yeah.
Where a single misplaced comma breaks the entire page.
It requires immense patience, just grueling trial and error.
But, and this is key, that friction is actually incredibly valuable. When you are painstakingly typing out lines of HTML or structuring a JSON array, you are forced to move slowly.
You can't rush it.
Right. The difficulty of the medium demands intentionality. You have to really care about the message you are trying to display, because putting it on the screen requires so much manual labor. The medium itself forces a deep intimacy with the content.
But then the friction disappears.
Yeah, it does.
Russ discovers artificial intelligence. Specifically, he spends a year testing various AI tools before settling on Google Pro, which likely refers to Google's advanced Gemini tiers. And he said it had everything he needed. And when he plugs his project into this AI, his world just explodes. He says, quote, anything was possible.
And that removal of friction fundamentally alters human behavior. When the barrier to creation drops to almost zero, the brain's reward circuit rewires itself.
Well, he utilized that lack of friction to scale massively. In a relatively short period, he used AI to generate over 100 pages and 3,500 distinct files for the website.
3,500 files.
Yeah. He built a sprawling digital empire. But sitting on top of those 3,500 files, he has this devastating realization. He writes that he had become content crazy, and he realized he had completely lost his original purpose.
This is the classic phenomenon of the medium overwhelming the message.
But wait, I have to stop you there and push back on this premise for a second.
Yeah.
We are constantly told that AI democratizes creation, right? That it empowers people who might not have the technical skills to realize their vision. If Russ's ultimate goal is to spread seeds of light and help massive charities like the American Cancer Society, shouldn't scale be the ultimate goal?
That's the logical assumption, yeah.
Doesn't 3,500 files reach more kids than one lost notebook? Why is scale suddenly framed as the enemy here?
It's a crucial question, and it's a trap a lot of creators fall into. The flaw in that logic is the assumption that volume equals impact, particularly in matters of emotional resonance.
Okay, unpack that for me.
Well, we have to look at something called the IKEA effect. Behavioral economics shows that people place a disproportionate high value on things they assemble or create themselves. The labor imbues the object with meaning.
Ah, okay. So the effort is part of the value.
Exactly. When Russ was handwriting stories or painstakingly coding HTML, the friction created a pause. That pause allowed him to constantly evaluate, is this meaningful? Does this serve Dakota's memory?
So the difficulty actually acted as a quality control for the soul of the project.
Precisely. When AI removes the friction, it removes the pause. The feedback loop changes entirely. Instead of asking, is this meaningful? The brain gets a dopamine hit from the sheer magic of instantaneous generation.
And the question becomes, what else can I make?
Yes. The novelty of the power replaces the intimacy of the purpose. The AI didn't democratize his vision, it industrialized it. Think about it. A seed of light requires slow, careful cultivation. 3,500 files in an industrial harvest. The human touch, the very thing that made his stories a lifeline for his niece, just got buried under the sheer volume of synthetic production.
The novelty of the power replaces the intimacy of the purpose. That is, that's a chilling realization for anyone creating anything today.
It really is.
So what does a person do when they wake up and realize they've built a 3,500-file skyscraper that they don't even recognize? Russ did something that is almost unheard of in the digital age.
I took it all down.
A year after this massive AI expansion, he pulled the plug. He completely shut the sprawling site down.
It requires immense courage to destroy your own work like that.
Yeah.
Especially when you've invested money in a whole year of your life into the expansion.
Yeah, if you go to mybackyard.org today, it's just a simple coming soon splash page. He leveled the skyscraper. But he did have the presence of mind to save the foundation.
Which was a very smart move.
Right. He notes that he had the common sense to save all my original content from the beginning where the heart is really there. He kept the material from the era when he was, in his words, rooted in faith and growing in wonder.
He essentially separated the signal from the noise.
It totally reminds me of severe botanical pruning. Like, if you have an old tree that has become massively overgrown, the canopy is blocking out the sun, the branches are just sprawling out of control, sometimes the only way to save the tree is to take a chainsaw and cut it all the way back to the stump.
Yeah, and to the outside observer, it looks like destruction. It looks bare and violent.
Exactly. But the arborist knows you are doing it specifically to save the root system.
Yeah.
You have to strip away the overgrowth so the original core can breathe and grow correctly again.
That pruning process is so necessary. But man, it leaves you entirely exposed. Mm-hmm. You no longer have the impressive canopy of 3,500 files to hide behind.
Right. It's just you and the stump.
And that exposure brings us to the emotional state Russ is in at the conclusion of his writing. It is incredibly raw.
Very raw. He ends the piece by quoting the old saying, "You can always find your way home." But he follows it with this incredibly vulnerable admission. He says he hopes that saying is true because right now he feels more lost than I've ever been.
Think about the gravity of that statement, coming from a man who spent his life driving 1.7 million miles across North America.
Oh, wow. I didn't even put that together.
Right. He was a professional navigator. He always knew his coordinates. He always knew the route home. But in the frictionless, infinite landscape of his own digital creation, he completely lost his internal bearings.
That is just, it's profound. So as we wrap up this analysis, I want to turn this directly to you, the listener. Russ's journey from the highway to the hospital room, from the notebook to the AI database, it's a mirror for how we all operate in a culture that constantly rewards speed and scale. Look at the projects you're working on right now. Look at your daily habits, or even just the goals you've set for yourself. Are you currently utilizing tools that make you content crazy?
Huh.
Are you building 3,500 files of noise just because the tools make it easy? Or are you focused on planting a single, intentional seed of light?
It's a really vital audit of our own motivations.
It is, because it is so easy to find yourself trapped on the top floor of a skyscraper you never actually intended to build.
It happens before you even realize it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do find yourself feeling like Russ,
yeah.
If you look at your life or your work and realize you are more lost than you've ever been, I want to leave you with this perspective on navigation.
What's that?
We tend to view feeling lost as a failure, you know, as the opposite of finding our way home. But from a psychological standpoint, realizing you are completely lost is the first necessary moment of clarity.
Wow.
It is the exact internal compass you need to recognize that the path of infinite scale was the wrong direction all along. Perhaps that original seed of light isn't meant to be some floodlight that illuminates the entire highway back home. Maybe it only exists to show you the very next step.
Just enough light to find your way out of the skyscraper and step back into the quiet of the garden. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Take care of your backyards.